listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello, I'm Rob Daly. This week on the show, Madrid derby disaster for Zidane, Atletico win at the Bernabeu, while Ronaldo goes on a wild ego trip. ESPN FC Spanish football correspondent Dermot Corrigan joins us as Ronaldo appears to criticise his teammates for not being to his level.
He said, you know, if all of my teammates were as good as me, then maybe we'd be winning. And also said that, you know, injuries had hurt the team, that injuries to people like Bale and Benzema and Marcelo were bad. And now he was kind of forced to have to play with people like Kovacic and Jesse.
Elsewhere, PSG finally lose in the league. Juventus beat Inter in the Derby d'Italia. And Chris reports back from his trip to Germany to see FC Cologne and Bochum.
It's emotions. You know, we are between Dortmund and Schalke, but we are Bochum.
Lots to come, including a preview of this weekend's huge game between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich.
This is Football in Europe.
Thanks for downloading the latest edition of the podcast. Chris Parrott is alongside me. Chris, you look a little red-eyed, mate.
Yeah.
A little bit hungover or something.
That's what a weekend in Germany does.
Well, what you've been up to? Because we just heard the music of Cologne.
Yeah, desperately trying to learn the words. It's the catchiest tune. That's Friday night, and I was humming it as I came into your flat this morning.
So you went to the Hertha game, because they lost at home to Hertha.
Yeah, they did, yeah. Six of us went out, and it was a very good evening.
Was it?
Yeah.
What did you think of the Cologne matchday experience?
The matchday experience, excellent. I mean, the game was...
I mean, Hertha aren't great to watch, yeah. So I wonder what impact that had on it.
In terms of entertainment, it was poor. It was basically when one team sets up not to be beaten, that's fine. But when both teams set up not to be beaten, it can be a little turgid. But one moment of quality won it. Bisevic scored. It was a really nice goal. And from Hertha's point of view, it was a massive win. Nobody behind them can string consistent results together. Like Mainz, Schalke, Leverkusen, Gladbach are all fighting fourth. And if Hertha can go on just even a mini run, frankly, because they've not been great recently, then they'll get Champions League football.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the way it's looking at the moment. By the way, Chris, last week on the show, and we're going to hear more about your trip from Germany later in the show, but last week we were talking about Manchester United youth players. Mm. You mentioned a load of guys... And you didn't mention a certain Marcus Rashford, who's now officially best player in the world.
Well,
what happened there? What happened, mate? Not a ball slipped, didn't it?
Well, I just didn't want to let the rabbit out of the... I didn't want to give basically,
or Midtjylland.
Or Midtjylland. Yeah, but basically, you would have thought Thursday night would have shown him what a good player he is, even against Midtjylland. I mean, he's quick, he's good in the air. All right, he's not going to score two goals every week, but...
He seems like an
introduction.
He seems like a right place... Right time kind of guy inside the box, which I like. Do you want to tell us a little bit about him? Because you cover Manchester United's youth team a lot. So you have seen him in action, but you said he was fast-tracked to the under-21s, even from the under-18s.
Yeah, well, I mean, United have, as we know, have had so many injuries this year. And I know coaches complain about that. But what it's meant is that a lot of young players have suddenly been involved in the first team squad. Rashford was on the bench a couple of times before he made his debut. So that means everyone gets bumped up another age group from the under-18s to the under-21s quickly. But he's always been seen as a star. He scored for the under-18s a lot of wonder goals. And then you saw his four finishes now for the first team. They've all been like Van Nistelrooy-esque. Born in South Manchester, he came through a prestigious boys club where the likes of Welbeck have come through. And this is the thing with United, and you realise when you go to Old Trafford that youth is in the fabric of the club, even though they're arguably the biggest team in the world, along with Barca and Real Madrid. And so when someone comes through and someone gets a chance, and fair play to Louis van Gaal, he's done it throughout his career, like he said, they love it. Everyone loves a homegrown player doing well, but I think there's something particularly special at United.
So very interesting to see how he does. So Manchester United... have been drawn against Liverpool in the Europa League. We won't dwell on this too long because the Europa League draw did happen last week, but that's pretty tasty.
That's very tasty.
Do you know if you're going to the United-Liverpool game yet?
Not sure. I would absolutely love to, but yeah. I mean, it's going to be a corker.
But Dortmund-Spurs arguably might be a better game.
And probably two of the most dynamic teams in European football.
Absolutely.
And it's a great test for both of them. Dortmund can't win the Bundesliga, I don't think. Bayern are going to win that. Tottenham absolutely can win the Premier League. They'll both play full-strength teams, but maybe a bigger game for Dortmund, I don't know. But You know, if they hadn't drawn each other, I think you'd put those two sides as maybe the favourites for the Europa League.
Yeah. I mean, that's I saw a few people tweet that would be a great final.
Yeah, it would.
You'd have to agree with that. Also, Chris, I just wanted to show you one thing before we'll talk about the Derby d'Italia later on, Juventus taking on Italy, which is a huge game in Serie A. But what do you think to this? So this is footage of Alessandro Del Piero on what appears to be like the Italian version of Strictly Come Dancing, and he's doing the tango.
That's a big name to get. Well done.
Yeah, that is massive. What did we get here? We had Savage, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would be like Rooney in a couple of minutes.
So what do you make to... Because he's in all black here.
Yeah, let's have a look.
Spinning some lady around who's obviously shown him how to do the moves. I mean, it looks pretty smooth.
Yeah, it is smooth.
Pretty good.
You think, though, female contestants have it a lot harder than celebrities? Because essentially, like, Del Piero's lifting the female dancer up, but she's doing most of it. I mean, he looks very smooth.
He does look like he's just sort of a pivot for her to dance.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you're the female, you have to do all of that stuff in the air.
So he's doing nothing, basically.
Well, and I'm not saying that. Also, don't you think the old hand-eye coordination is obviously brilliant as a footballer, and it definitely helps, because he does look good.
So we will tweet that out later on. And don't forget to keep your tweets coming in using @FIEPodcast. Thanks to everyone who sent in nice things about the Leverkusen feature last week. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you... have the time. I never know how to say that. So next up, we're going to hear from ESPN FC and Irish Examiner journalist Dermot Corrigan on the Madrid derby, Real Madrid against Atletico at the weekend. Atletico winning at the Bernabeu again.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Dermot Corrigan's back on the show. Dermot, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad. Let's talk about the Madrid derby. Atletico getting a win at Real Madrid. I mean, what are the main talking points from the derby at the weekend?
I guess the main talking point was Cristiano Ronaldo's reaction to the game. It was typical enough of Madrid derbies recently in that Atletico were really well organised. They fought really hard. They outthought and outmuscled Madrid on the pitch, got the goal, and were comfortable enough, really. Madrid didn't have too many chances. Cristiano had a couple of chances, but Atletico really deserved the win. And afterwards, Cristiano came out in the mix zone, and he was asked by some of the Spanish reporters, you know, they were laying the blame on him a little bit, and he didn't take it well and hit back and said, you know, if all of my teammates were as good as me, then maybe we'd be winning. And also said that, you know, injuries had hurt the team, that injuries to people like Bale and Benzema and Marcelo were bad. And now he was kind of forced to have to play with people like Kovacic and Jesse. And that didn't go down too well at all, as you can expect. He came out later and clarified it. Ramos came out about half an hour after him, stood pretty much in the same spot, talked to the same people and said, you know, Cristiano doesn't really feel this way. You know, he's frustrated, but that's not really what he means. And then lo and behold, a statement came out via a reporter pretty close to Jorge Mendes, a statement from Ronaldo came out saying he didn't mean to say what he said, or what he said had been misconstrued. He doesn't feel he's better than anybody, and, you know, he respects all his teammates, that kind of thing. The upshot is that it's open season in Madrid. There's a lot of infighting going on, battling behind the scenes, because they're pretty sure, I think, that the big guys at Madrid, both the players and the directors, that this season is not going to end well, and the summer is going to be a bit of a bloodbath with Florentino Perez's future up in the air, with Ronaldo's future up in the air, Zidane's future up in the air. It's all great fun, really.
With the Ronaldo comments, because I was reading your Twitter timeline on Saturday night, is the issue that this is genuinely what Ronaldo thinks, and that actually he shouldn't say it? I mean, you mentioned there that Ramos said he doesn't really feel this way, but I suspect he does.
In some points of view, you can understand it. You know, he is Madrid, even though he's not as good as he used to be. Maybe he's still an excellent player. You know, he's still one of the best players around. He scored a lot of goals for them this year. You could say a lot of the goals have come against Malmo or Espanyol or whatever. He feels pretty frustrated with how things are going this season. There's an issue as well around the medical staff at the club. People are not really happy. The players are not happy with the medical treatment that they get. A doctor there who's close to the president, who's not so popular with the players, and he's frustrated that Benzema is out. Bale, you know, has a latest muscle injury. He's not able to play. Maybe if Madrid did have their best team out on the pitch all the time, they would be closer to Barca in the table. You know, you can't really argue with that. I don't think they'd be ahead of Barca. I don't think they're as good as Barca. And, you know, even with Bale and Benzema, they've struggled to beat Atletico before. But there was a couple of things that have all come together, I think, that pushed Ronaldo to say, to say what's on his mind, as opposed to give the usual, you know, we're disappointed, but we're gonna come back and we're still fighting for it. You know, he was more honest than he would normally be.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes we're looking for honesty. I saw a stat as well, the Real Madrid have only won one of the last 10 derbies between the teams, and Simeone has now beaten Mourinho, Ancelotti and Zidane's Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. I mean, why do Atletico have such a great record against Real Madrid in recent times?
They're just able to squeeze the game, and Madrid's bigger players just can't get into the game. Like James and Isco and Modric and Cruz, you know, they were just squeezed out of it by guys like Saúl and Koke and Gabi, who are not as, maybe Koke's a good player, but the Atletico players, they work harder, they fight harder, they believe in what they're doing. I know, you know, Madrid fans will say we won the Champions League in 2014 and they beat them in the Champions League last year as well. So it's not completely one-sided, but Atletico just are able to make the game about the things that they want it to be, to keep it tight, make sure that there's not too many chances at either end. And they just have a kind of confidence thing over the Madrid players. Barca are able to beat Atletico pretty well in the last couple of meetings. But against Madrid, just whatever, the Atletico team is better than the Madrid individuals. And that's what comes true.
I wonder where this goes in the summer. You use the term bloodbath there. Are we talking in terms of Zidane or Florentino Perez? Or both?
Talking to some of the guys who are you know, the Spanish guys who've been around the club for years and for decades, and who know Florentino and who know how the political things work at the club, they say his situation's pretty dicey. It's 10 years ago. It was kind of ironic. It was 10 years ago to the day on Saturday since Florentino resigned the first time, when the situation was pretty similar. You know, that he'd come in, he had won some trophies, but they had a lot of big names who weren't playing really well. There was a lot of discontent around, coaches were coming and going, and he just gave up on it the first time. He did come back, and he says he's not going to walk away at this stage, but he's not very popular. If there was a successor, you know, if some of the ex-players made a move against him, maybe Raul or Hierro, these guys who are still really popular, you could see something happening. But it's very difficult because of the way the statutes of the club are. It's very difficult for anybody to challenge him. Maybe Zidane might go, because Florentino Zidane, you don't know if Florentino was really ever that convinced by Zidane. Then maybe Ronaldo, because he's not so popular now, he might be sold. It's great fun. It's kind of soap opera stuff. We don't know what's going to happen.
So we've asked people to tweet in questions for you, Dermot, today, and we've had loads in. Ryan asks, Atletico are struggling to find an established strike force this term. And I do think that's fair. He says, who should partner Antoine Griezmann up front?
Yeah, it's a good question. And they are really struggling. You know, everybody, Vieira's only got one goal in La Liga so far this season. Torres went about 4 or 5 months without scoring. They're the two obvious partners. I think it depends on the game. Like Torres, he's still a willing runner. You know, he's bigger, he's stronger. He can hold up defences and maybe open up a bit of space for Griezmann. But Vieira's better at playing the little one-twos, at creating and linking with the midfield. It depends on the opponent. I think neither is really an obvious solution, or neither is a great solution for Atletico. But Simeone kind of goes horses for courses depending on who they're playing.
Elsewhere on this topic, Dare to Busquets has tweeted in, how are Hesse, Lucas and Co going to handle Ronaldo's post-Madrid derby comments? Do you see this having any long-term effect?
I don't think it's going to be too bad. I wouldn't say they were hugely surprised by it. You know, they're kind of used to Ronaldo at this stage, and they're on a different level to him. They're on a different status, and they're aware of that. And I guess it wouldn't have been a huge surprise. It would be kind of embarrassing for them, but not the end of the world. I think the relationship between Ronaldo and Ramos is pretty strong, and Ramos is the captain now that Casillas is gone. They, you know, they respect each other. They get on well together. I think the dressing room is still pretty united, still with Zidane. I don't think Ronaldo will be kind of ostracized because of what he said, even though, you know, it's not ideal and they wouldn't have enjoyed it. They just have to accept that's how it goes.
Can we ask you one on media bias, Dermot? Because I'm really fascinated by the way the papers work in Spain. We've had a tweet in from Gracias Xavi to talk about how Madrid media derby are biased, I should say, with Marca and AS, and you've got the Barcelona press as well. I think Mundo Deportivo would sort of be the one there. How politically does this only happen with the Clásico clubs, or does this extend throughout Spain that you have papers with political agendas for football clubs?
No, well, it happens in other cities as well. Like Super Deporte in Valencia are very, very supportive, just as much as AS or Mundo Deportivo, or even more supportive of of the regime at the club. There's certain journalists there who will be very close to the board and close to the sporting director, especially who's gone in there now. In Sevilla, you have Estadio Deportivo, who are also probably not quite as intertwined with Sevilla and Betis, but, you know, very supportive, very would push the views of the club's president, the club's coaches. Then when things turn, you know, if the team are doing really well, they can turn in the same way as Marca or us could turn on Madrid, on a coach. They could turn on a manager, especially with the political infighting. You know, you have to read between the lines when you read and see which particular journalists are writing which stories. But it's not just Madrid thing, or it's not just a Barca thing. It happens throughout Spain.
And we've got a couple of questions in on Deportivo. So one of them slightly tongue-in-cheek, I think, from Ersfeld to say, what happened to those La Coruña draws? Two consecutive defeats, it's unreal.
With Depor, I think the case is that they had a great first half of the season. You know, they exceeded expectations completely because I expected them to struggle against relegation, and a lot of people did too, the way they just narrowly avoided it last year. But they've been up in the top half for the whole of the season so far. Under Victor, they really well organised. Lucas Paris was scoring a lot of goals. They don't have a huge squad and injuries and I guess tiredness will take its toll on them. Also, they don't have that much to play for. They're unlikely to make the Europa League really realistically over the season. If they finish 12th, 13th, they'd be delighted. They have enough points to stay. You know, they have to win a few games before the end of the season, but they're not really in danger of slipping down. So it's normal, I think, for them to draw a lot of games. They lost to Granada at the weekend, who are a new coach, were bottom of the table, really needed the points. And, you know, Granada just fought for it. I was watching a good bit of the game and there wasn't that much in it, but Granada, you could sense maybe needed the win more than Depor, and that, I guess, why their form has trailed off a bit.
Okay, Dermot, next question. FCB Renault Coulet asks, will fatigue become a factor for Barcelona into the latter stages of the season?
Yeah, it's a decent point because they have played a lot of games, and key players like Piqué and Busquets and the three guys up front, Iniesta as well, you know, they're really important to them. And when Busquets is not there or Piqué is not there, they can't struggle. You know, they're getting through and winning games, but they're not, especially away from home, they're not always dominating games the way you would expect them to. I guess they have a pretty good gap now at the top of the table, a pretty good cushion, 8 points to Atletico and 12 to Real Madrid. So they can afford to rest players. It's something that Luis Enrique is very aware of, and he does try and rotate players. He doesn't really rotate the top three. The way they're playing at the moment, you know, it's hard to back against them in any game.
Barcelona certainly don't seem like stopping anytime soon because they got another win at the weekend, coming from behind to beat Sevilla by 2-1. Piqué with the winning goal. That's now 34 games unbeaten in all competitions for Barcelona, equaling a Spanish football record that belongs to Real Madrid going back to 1989. And if Barcelona can avoid defeat to Rayo Vallecano in that next game, that record will extend. So let's talk about the fact that the Valencia were beaten 3-0 by Bilbao at the weekend. Looking at the highlights, I saw Valencia should have had one penalty and maybe two. I felt the handball was a penalty. But Gary Neville kicked off because that's a bad loss for his team.
Yeah, he really did. And I'd agree with you. It was a penalty for the handball. It was a header from close enough range that was blocked by the defender's hand. And I don't think the Andre Gomez was a penalty. I thought he had chances as well. It was a tight enough game up until the last 20 minutes or so when the substitution started. And Athletic had rested a few players. They brought on regulars San Jose and Ado Reis. Valencia also, Neville also made a few changes, swapped things around a bit, and Athletic scored three goals really quickly. So, you know, maybe if they are 1-0 ahead or whatever, the ref gives the penalty, then they're leading in the game. But also the way that the coaches swapped things around late on in the game, I think Valverde got one over on Neville and Athletic went for the juggler, scored three quick goals. Valencia looked really disorganised. They lost their shape completely. So Neville was maybe within his rights to criticise the referee. I think he went a bit far. He called him a joke and embarrassing and stuff like that. Like, Valencia fans will be disappointed. Losing 3-0 at home is not good. They're playing against Athletic in the Europa League as well coming up, which is probably a bigger game.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
And a big thanks to Dermot for appearing on the show. Chris Parrott still alongside me. Chris, it'll be interesting to see if Barcelona can... Well, they shouldn't. I mean, Rayo Vallecano, they should extend that unbeaten record that me and Dermot talked about there.
Yeah, that would be the shock of the season if they don't, let's be honest. Okay, quiz for you.
Well, hold on. What a quiz for you? What are you talking about?
Longest unbeaten streaks.
Oh, and... sorry, so I'm doing all the longest runs in different countries.
Yeah, we should have talked about this off-air, okay, shouldn't yeah, we? Because yeah, we're yeah, just rambling yeah, now. Yeah, 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 so no, I will no, give no, you no, the yeah, yeah. amount of games and... You have to guess the amount of games in the league and you have to guess the club. Okay. Italy, 43.
That's got to be Conte's Juve, isn't it? Surely.
It is. Excellent. Okay.
A good start, eh? Good start.
English top flight. There's a clue for you.
All right. So that's got to be Arsenal's 50, is it? Or Arsenal's 49?
No. 40.
What?
Yeah.
Sorry, hold on. English, did you say?
Yeah.
Longest unbeaten run?
Yeah.
It is Arsenal, isn't it?
Not according to this little picture.
What was it say?
On Twitter. Nottingham Forest.
Well, hold on. Arsenal went 49 games unbeaten, didn't they? And then lost to United. Chris is live Googling. I almost saw the answers.
Longest unbeaten run in English.
This is shambolic, mate.
Football. No, I think it's correct. Football records in England. Wikipedia. Excellent.
But hold on. Before you look at that, what did Arsenal do?
Can't remember.
They went 49 games unbeaten, and then they lost to Old Trafford.
Wins. This is...
Hold on. This isn't league, is it? This is all comps.
Yeah, no. I'm talking about... This is league.
Oh.
Yes.
Or everything. Is it everything? It's not. It's just all competitions.
Miss strolling in from the trend.
All right. I didn't know it was Forest. All right. So you said it's Nottingham Forest, did you?
Yeah, Nottingham Forest, yeah.
Fine. Yeah, all right. Next.
That's all I've got.
What?
Well, on this little picture, and without Googling again, I haven't got the Bundesliga one.
Sorry, Chris, two questions a quiz does not make.
Well, doesn't it?
No, particularly when we argued over the one of the two. all right, let's leave that there.
it's Juventus and Nottingham Forest.
All right.
Oh, okay, one more. Who's got the current longest unbeaten record ongoing in European football, in European competition?
Oh, this is going to be a stupid thing, isn't it? Some club who doesn't play in Europe. You're smiling. I reckon it's Ipswich, is it? Is it Ipswich Town?
It's Ipswich Town.
You're an idiot.
And that happened when Paris Saint-Germain lost at home. They had it.
PSG had it.
PSG had it, then they lost, so it's Ipswich Town. Never been beaten at home.
Have they not?
Nope. Including beating Barcelona,
Inter,
Milan, Inter.
Yeah.
When
were they last in Europe, though?
Oh, that's just a minor detail.
All right, let's move on. Derby d'Italia. Speaking of Inter, they lost 2-0 to Juventus at the weekend in the Derby d'Italia, as it has been coined, I think, since the 1960s, I think, that game. Chris, what happened here? How did Juve get another win?
Typical Juve, in a way. They're so good at the back. They never look like conceding. Buffon's broken his own record for the amount of minutes having not conceded a goal. They took the lead. Dybala's long free kick. Poor defending, really, and Leonardo Bonucci scored, which was a bit of a surprise. And then Alvaro Morata came off the bench, won a penalty, scored the penalty. 2-0. They just continue to roll on Juventus. Bologna ended that winning run, but then they just go into the Derby d'Italia.
They were lucky against Bayern, weren't they? I mean, they were lucky to get something in that game.
They were, but then they showed that you can't always play brilliantly, can you? But they showed the spirit that they have, and that goes a long way, I think. They just look, they're a machine again, like they were last season. And they must be so gutted to have not won that group. Like, they should have won the group. Yeah. And if they hadn't have run into Bayern or Barcelona, you'd bat them to beat anybody
else.
Did they lose
their last game to Sevilla in the group?
Yeah, they lost. City won, and Dybala hit the bar, and had that goal gone in on match day 6, not only would Juve have won the group, Gladbach would have gone into the Europa League ahead of Sevilla.
Oh, yeah.
It was that time.
And Juve might have been playing Dynamo Kiev instead of Bayern.
Exactly.
Bad defeat for Inter, and their concerning form continues. I saw some quotes from, I think he's vice president now, Javier Zanetti at Inter. He says, Inter's players must take full responsibility and give more. And this is quite interesting. He said, we must get back to being more solid is the only way to emerge at the moment. I think that's interesting because that was what Inter were. They were very solid at the back in the first half of the season under Mancini.
Yeah, they were. And they kept on winning 1-0, didn't they?
Yeah.
But they haven't beaten Juve now since November 2012, which is, maybe it's not that surprising given how dominant Juve have been, but in one of the big derbies to have not have won for 4 years, more than 4 years is pretty alarming. But yeah. I mean, they're still fifth, 5 points behind Roma, who seem to have got their mojo back under Spalletti. I don't think they're going to get top three. There's a long way to go.
There is a long way. I think they could still do it.
Do Roma look good though at the moment? 5 points is a lot to make up. And you'd have to think that Juve and Napoli are going to get the first two Champions League places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about Antonio Conte, Chris, because he's currently Italy head coach, and he'll see that through to the European Championships. He got Italy through relatively comfortably, although I never thought they were that convincing in qualifying. But there's a lot of talk that he's on his way. He's the next Chelsea manager. Chris Hiddink says he's definitely not staying. He said that last week. So what do you make to that, Antonio Conte, to the Premier League?
I think it'll be quite an exciting appointment. You know, he did a great job at Juve. He likes being a national team coach, but the constant arguments with clubs and lack of...
The politics of it.
Yeah, the politics, which going to Chelsea is interesting with those politics, because that hasn't been the easiest club to manage, has it, for anybody?
Absolutely
really.
Not.
Just wonder if Max Allegri, if he came to the Premier League, if he might really do fantastically. We saw Mourinho as a tactical genius, or he's seen in this country. Okay, second spell ended badly, but that, you know, those games when Chelsea had to win and he sets up a different way and wins. And I wonder if Allegri could come and do that really well. You know, he's about the most tactical coach, isn't he?
He's a very smart tactical coach. I mean, when I went to see Juve last month, I was just so impressed at how smooth and well organised the team are. It's like they have pieces of rope connecting them so that when one moves, they all move in this sort of unison. Conte is an interesting case. Apparently, he's learning English at the moment. That's what reports say. Here's some quotes from Fabio Capello. He says, Conte is preparing for Chelsea. He has time to arrive and train Chelsea in the best way. Capello also said that Conte needs to sign defenders for Chelsea, and John Terry's situation's ongoing. He also said how he's going to have to work on his communication, because Capello said he found it very difficult as Russia head coach working through a translator, and you would have thought it would be vital.
If he plays 3-5-2, that will be interesting. You have to think that, you know, almost so many teams play this 4-2-3-1 or a variation of that.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if he comes in and plays 3-5-2. I've always thought, actually, if someone could master that in the Premier League, they'd just be different. And therefore, I think they'd probably do well. Like when 4-3-3 first came in and you had teams playing that. And
But Conte's got the flexibility to play both, hasn't he? We saw that with his Juve side. And they did win 3 Serie A titles in a row, unbeaten in his entire debut season, as we've already mentioned. And Andrea Pirlo, there's some really great quotes from Pirlo's book about him. He described Conte as a beast. There's this one quote, Pirlo paraphrasing his first team talk. Andrea Pirlo said, Conte had fire running through his veins and he moved like a viper. Conte said, this squad, dear boys, is coming off the back of 2 consecutive 7th place finishes. It's crazy. It's shocking. I'm not here for this, so it's time to stop being so crap.
That's good. But you have to remember what he was like as a player. He was a tenacious midfielder and he won the Champions League. He won almost everything. He would have won Euro 2000 had it not been for that France comeback in Rotterdam. So it's the old cliche, our top players don't make top managers. Well, Conte is a further example, actually, of some do.
And it's worth noting, though, that there's still this match-fixing thing, which is a bit of a hangover from his time at Siena. So just to clarify the situation with what happened at Siena, he served a 4-month touchline ban as Juve head coach, incidentally, because he was Juve head coach at the time, for failing to report alleged match-fixing while he was in charge at Siena. Now, Conte has denied any involvement in any acknowledgement of match-fixing. It was one player's account that led to him getting what was, I think, initially a 10-month suspension and then reduced to a 4-month suspension. But there are reports there's still something hanging around that case. If you want to read more about that, there's actually an excellent article by Daniel Taylor on the Guardian website about Antonio Conte. Okay, let's move on now. We'll go to the headlines next. And a league title has already been won this season in February, that coming in Greece. PSG's unbeaten season in Liga is over after a 2-1 defeat to Lyon. Serge Dada got what was the eventual winner as the champions lost without Angel Di Maria. Lyon go third. Meanwhile, Serge Aurier has been banished to the PSG reserve team for 3 weeks and he'll miss the Chelsea second leg after that Periscope video where he criticised teammates and manager Laurent Blanc. A former bank robber has been charged for attempting to extort millions out of Bayern Munich. He's accused of sending letters containing bomb and drone threats. Bayern are yet to comment on the story. Olympiakos are Greek champions already. Marco Silva's side claimed the title in February after a 3-0 victory over Varea, the fastest championship win in Greek history. Gus Poyet's Ike a second. Napoli forward Lorenzo Insigne and his wife were robbed at gunpoint on Saturday by a group who followed him to demand cash and valuables. His agent has confirmed the incident in Naples. The Belgrade derby had to be stopped after a few seconds of the weekend after smoke from flares filled the pitch. The delay lasted for several minutes before league leaders Red Star beat rivals Partizan 2-1. And in Belgium, Anderlecht played out a 3-3 draw with Standard Liège. It's getting close to that point in the season where the Pro League breaks up and the top six play in a championship playoff for the title. OK, those are your headlines. And now for your next feature, Chris and two of his friends went to a Bundesliga 2 game in Bochum on Saturday. The club are fighting to get back into the top flight and needed a win.
This is Football in Europe, Matchday Road Trip.
Here we are in Bochum then, footballing heartland, right in the middle of the Ruhr. We got the train from Cologne, which took about an hour. We went past Dusseldorf, Duisburg, Essen, who have all got football teams, saw those grounds from the train. We're about 20 kilometres away from Dortmund. And we've come to Bochum against Sandhausen. Dylan's with me. Now, you're from America, but what do you make of the stadium, first of all?
Yeah, it looks like a tight ground, a bit of history about it. Quite busy outside. Everyone looks up for it today.
We also must add that we've got our overnight bags, and they almost stole my £40 moisturiser, and they did steal something of yours, Henry.
Yeah, they stole my cricket bat, which is used solely for hotel and corridor cricket. So we've lost a friend there.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. It's never coming back.
My name is Frank Meats.
What does it mean to be a Bochum fan?
It's emotions. You know, we are between Dortmund and Schalke, but we are Bochum.
Fashionably late, just in time for the first goal, literally. About 10 seconds after we got into the main stand. Brilliant finish from Simon to Roda. Right then, Hen, you can have a beer in the stand in Bochum. What they don't tell you is what it tastes like. So you've just had a sip.
Yeah, it tastes a little bit like Stella, topped with a little bit of bleach. So it's an interesting one.
You said hairs in a chest. Dylan, out of 10, what'd you give the beer? 10 being high.
It's got to be a negative 10 for me. It tastes like dishwater.
Game on. Pretty much their first shot on target, and Sandhausen have scored. But they're worried now because Sandhausen have equalised. 18 minutes to go, and somehow Bochum have thrown this game away. Alex Udavuz was the man who eventually forced it over the line. Simon Taroda's just won a penalty. Really good turn, and their main man has immediately picked up the ball, and he's about to take it, as you can hear. Here he comes. He's right footed. This is to make it 3-2 to Bochum. Do you think they can make it back to the Bundesliga this season?
Yes, maybe. You know, we have to win now at Düsseldorf, and we have to win Arminia Bielefeld. And if you win the next 9 matches from the next 12, we'll do it.
Well, that's the sound of Henry blowing his hands because it is very cold in the shade, but glorious in the sun. And in the they almost messed it up, but Bochum won. And all in all, pretty good day out for 12 euros.
Exceptional day out for 12 euros. We're with the ultras as well, which added to the experience. I didn't really know where to look, really, whether to look at the game or the guys hanging off the fence with a with a speakerphone dictating what to sing. We didn't know the words, but we tried our best.
Yeah, we definitely. This is the same chance, roughly, also. Didn't I mean they don't see any of the game, those three guys?
No, I mean 100% focused on just getting everybody behind the team, and hanging off the fence about 20 feet off the ground is insane.
Like for us though, because we went to Cologne last night, if you compare the two experiences, that was entertaining, definitely, and it adds a lot being in that section in the ground.
Definitely, and they played at times. They played some pretty spectacular football, really. And to come back, you know, to give up two and then and come back and just the way they did comfortably, and they almost got another just to finish off at the end. It was entertaining. I enjoyed it. I want to keep drinking. Let's party on.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Reporter Chris Parrott live from Bochum there. Chris Parrott joins me now on the show. Chris Parrott, did you prefer Bochum to Cologne? The day out?
Yeah, possibly.
But was that down to the quality of the game? Because you said that the Bochum game was a good one.
Twofold. Probably the quality of the game, and also we managed to get tickets in the standing section. So I'm sure had we been in the standing section for the Cologne game, even though it was wasn't a great match, it probably would have been fun because you're just there and, you know, the game is, as Henry and Dylan said at the end there, the game is almost secondary because there's so much to see when you've got these mental characters just shouting at everyone basically to sing. But yeah, it was really good
fun. I think
if
we're not used to it in England, we don't quite have that.
Exactly. We're not used to it. And actually, if it came in, say, standing, it would be interesting to see how people would react because they haven't been brought up standing. You know, my dad, he always eulogises about going to the North Bank. And
right.
But our generation and younger generations have never stood at football. So how it would be interesting, the psyche, because the psyche's different there. You feel like everyone's got your back a little bit.
Right.
Even though we're English and we're in Bochum, which is basically like going for a day out in Rotherham or Birmingham.
Well, Bochum are fifth in the table in Bundesliga 2 and going for promotion. Why on earth was Henry trying to bring a cricket bat in? What was that about, the cricket bat thing?
Well, he loves cricket, but also brought it for corridor cricket or airport cricket or anything.
How old are you?
Well, that's a personal question. 12.
Do you love corridor cricket?
Oh, so much fun. One hand, one bounce. But so, yeah, we didn't quite realise, we were a bit late for the game as well, that suddenly, oh yeah, we're going into an ultra section with a cricket bat. Unlikely to get
it. Did Henry get it back?
No, gone.
Oh no.
And I don't think cricket's huge in Bochum, but some security guard's son has now got a mini cricket bat.
Yeah, that's no idea what it is, probably. So Chris, also at the weekend, you got speaking to an ultra from Cologne.
Yeah.
We mentioned at the top of the show you went to Cologne at the weekend. Now, Cologne fans recently marched through the centre of Gladbach, and actually the two sets of fans are not happy with new restrictions on A, the number of tickets the clubs are getting for that derby between Gladbach and Cologne, which was just over a week ago now. And also, they have to personalise the tickets. So I think it's so that the police can ID them if there is any trouble, because there's been a lot of trouble between the fans. What was this, because you couldn't record him, but you were talking to him. What was he saying about the whole situation?
First of all, he said that Gladbach had done the same thing at Cologne earlier in the season. And that the two sets of supporters were 100% behind each other. His view, which I think I agreed with quite a lot of it, although you can't condone the violence which has gone on, and it was that it's not the individual act of the authorities doing that because they have a reason, because there's been the trouble. It's the whole, it's the bigger picture of censorship, and if they do this, what's the next thing they do? You know, down the line, will we not be standing? Will we not be able to have a drink in the ground like you can't in this country? He used English football as an example of, look, this one thing comes in, and in a year's time, something else happens. And very interesting point, I thought he said that the authorities and the Bundesliga sell German football over the world now as, and one of the reasons we were in Cologne and we love German football, us two, is because of the atmosphere. 90% down to the ultras, which it is. And he said, if you're going to sell this product from essentially what we're bringing to the stadiums, you should have a bit of respect for us.
Chris, let's talk about the Bundesliga now and what happened at the weekend, because we have a big game on the horizon. So in the Bundesliga at the weekend, Bayern went to Wolfsburg and won 2-0. Kingsley Coman and Robert Lewandowski with the goals. Lewandowski, of course, scored 5 against Wolfsburg in the Bundesliga earlier in the season. And he scored. It was a lovely first-time finish to kill off Wolfsburg, who've been nowhere near as good this season. And Dortmund beat Hoffenheim 3-1. Hoffenheim have been bottom for a lot of the season in the Bundesliga with their new 28-year-old head coach Julian Nagelsmann. And Hoffenheim were 1-0 up until a red card which came sort of, I think it was about on the hour mark, for a challenge from behind from Sebastian Rudi. And in the final 10 minutes of the game, Dortmund scored three times to win 3-1. Chris, the attack, the red card itself was an interesting one. It was a, to give listeners a picture, it was a counter-attack from Dortmund that just moved over the halfway line. Rudi was tracking back, and it's a tackle from behind. He's quite far from the player and brings him down, shown a straight red card.
It's basically a challenge you'd make on FIFA.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You're just like, oh, they're going to score now. And maybe he realised, because it was that front three who were going to... It was Aubameyang on the ball, and he had his two mates.
And Mkhitaryan and Royce.
Royce, so they probably were going to score. But he wasn't the last man. You can see why... It's one of those that will never be overturned.
He's thinking he's getting a yellow, isn't he?
He's thinking,
I'm going to take a yellow for the team here and bring this guy down.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was World Cup 98 where any tackle from behind was an instant red card, and it reminded me of... of that.
I mean, it was... I don't think he can have any complaints because it was very, very cynical.
I wonder if the referee actually may have seen it as violent conduct as well, even though when you look at it, there's no studs involved. It is a trip, but very deliberate. Regardless, Dortmund get the win. In the Bundesliga, there's midweek fixtures, an English week, as they call it over there. Bayern take on Mainz, who are fifth in the table, and Dortmund go to Darmstadt, who are trying to avoid relegation. They're just above the drop zone. But this is all because Dortmund play Bayern next weekend. Absolutely huge fixture in the Bundesliga, Chris. 8 points separate the two teams. But you already think Dortmund can't win it anyway, as you said earlier in the show. So.
Yeah, I mean, even if they won the game, they'd be 5 points behind, and I just can't see Bayern dropping 5 points. But it, De Classica, it's the fixture, and isn't it great that it's first v second, and 58 goals plays 57 goals. I mean, yeah, it should be really, really good. The atmosphere will be absolutely immense at Dortmund for that game. And, you know, I hope for the Bundesliga in a way that Dortmund do win it. I don't think they'll win the title, but if they do, it just keeps it bubbling along nicely. If Bayern go and win and go 11 points clear, well, they may as well hand them the trophy on the pitch.
What's going to be interesting about this game is, I mean, if we throw back to earlier in the season, Bayern hosted Dortmund and beat them 5-1 in a league game. Berkey in goal had a pretty poor day that day in Munich, and he wasn't great at the weekend. He was at fault, arguably, for Hoffenheim's goal. What I think's interesting is that you've got two front threes here for both teams. Dortmund do play with the front three, Bayern don't, but you've got Costa, Lewandowski and Müller for Bayern, who've been outrageous. And for Dortmund, you've got Royce, Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang, who've been sensational. And Bayern are in a different position because of their defender situation. I just wonder how the front three for Dortmund will do against them, Chris.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a real test. And you saw away at Juventus, arguably, you know, Kimmich had played well, but he isn't a centre-half, and one misplaced pass and Juve scored their first goal and then went on to get 2-2. And if that's Boateng, he probably clears it up the pitch, and Bayern might certainly win 2-0, but they might win 3-0 or whatever. And
Yeah,
and it also, it will encourage Dortmund, if they weren't going to attack anyway, to attack. I mean, you have to pinpoint a team's weakness, and it's certainly not Bayern going forward with all the injuries. It's probably Bayern defensively anyway, you know, even with their first 11, let alone with all the injuries. So it might, from a neutral point of view, make it an even better game because Dortmund have a chance of winning.
I'm just looking at the team he played from the weekend. So in defence, it was Lahm, Kimmich, who is a midfielder, but Guardiola's been really impressed with how he's adapted. Alaba at centre-back and Juan Bernat at left-back. Bernatti is coming back from injury. I wonder... He doesn't seem to rate him too much. I wonder if he will play.
Yeah, and Oscar, just one more mention of the Bundesliga is, speaking of Gladbach.
Yeah.
The great entertainers, I think. They've now had 85 goals in their games. They're up to fourth. That battle for fourth, as I mentioned earlier, is brilliant. No one seems to really want it. And there's 1 point between Gladbach in fourth and Schalke in seventh. And Gladbach, I mean, they've scored 45 goals. That's the third best. They've conceded... This is a team who are fourth. They've conceded 40 goals, which is the third worst defensive record in the whole division. Get on both teams to score.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think that's all we have time for on this week's podcast. If you do enjoy the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or tweet us at FIE Podcast. Chris, I think we're back next Monday, are we?
We are.
This is Football in Europe